Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. I will tell you, this is one of the most often asked questions I get. CBD, does it work for my pet? My pet has thunderstorm anxiety. My dog, usually, with thunderstorm anxiety. Or my dog has separation anxiety. My dog has itchy skin. My dog, unfortunately, is suffering from cancer, undergoing chemotherapy. Can CBD help? As it presumably, and I believe probably, can in people. What about, notice the way I hesitated even when I said that. Even for people, we're not absolutely sure. So what about dogs and cats? We'll talk with an expert. And I'm so excited about this conversation with Harry Turner. He is the star, I suppose, of a documentary feature called Wildcat. It's about Harry and also another naturalist, a woman, who he ends up having a relationship with. But that's not really what it's about. It's about an ocelot. That's a small wild cat species. They're endangered. He is in the jungle of Ecuador. What is it like living in the jungle of Ecuador and being the first person ever to try to reintroduce an ocelot who was pulled from mom at a young age, unfortunately, and then reintroduce the animal into the wild? Is it possible? It'll be a fascinating conversation, I am sure, because this documentary, there's another word for that, docudrama might be a better way to say it, because it's also about him, and he is a soldier who suffers from PTSD. We learn about the impact of all that. He actually considers suicide at one point. So it's a film that goes in many different directions. We'll tell you how you can watch this movie at home and also talk with Harry Turner. And we will do all of that and, as they say in radio, much more. But first, Dr. Dana Varbal isn't only the chief medical officer of the North American Veterinary Community's giant VMX Veterinary Conference. You are also Chicago, which we love and so proud of everything you've done.
Thank you. I like to hear that. That makes me happy.
Does it really?
Yeah. Are you kidding? Chicago girl at heart. I want to make Chicago happy.
Well, look at what you're achieving, you know.
Thank you.
And this conference, the biggest of its kind on this side of the world, 28,000 people.
Just under 28,000. Yeah. I mean, absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. That's amazing. And lots of new stuff has come out of this conference.
Yes.
And you know what? This is the conference's 40th anniversary. And,
it is.
Well, 40 years ago, neither you or I were here at this conference.
No, we weren't. We weren't. But
you probably weren't even here on this planet 40 years ago.
I was.
Don't argue with the
host. Okay. Yes. So you're right.
There wouldn't have been drugs or anything specifically created for cats or dogs.
Correct.
Now, every day, it seems.
Yes.
Or at least
I can't even count the number of medications that have been announced or released just at this conference.
Yeah.
And what's interesting and what Steve and I really love is that these medications aren't human medications that trickle down into veterinary medicine. These were developed specifically for cats or specifically for dogs.
Yeah.
And they're really designed for their own, how their bodies process drugs, how their bodies work. So not only are they safer and better for them, but they're truly more effective at treating things like osteoarthritis.
That's a good place
diabetes.
To start. Okay,
yes.
There's so many.
Oh my gosh, so many.
I know cancers, but let's start with what you said, osteoarthritis.
Mm-hmm.
So years ago, people didn't even understand that cats do suffer arthritis, but it turns out now we know they do, and they do very, very often. And there's been nothing that has been approved specifically for cats until now. No drug really has been specifically for cats approved, but now we have one.
Yes. And, you know, what's exciting for me as a practitioner, as someone who still does treat cats occasionally, when cats got sore, when they got painful, I had a list of drugs in my head. And to be honest, it was the try and pick the best of some bad choices. Side effects could be kind of high. The risks sometimes did not weigh the reward. Sometimes they were hard to give. Cats didn't like them. But now we have drugs specifically for feline osteoarthritis. And since our cats are living to be 15, 16 years old.
Or older.
Pretty regularly, we know those cats have arthritis. So that's really, really exciting to me.
And the drug you're talking about is an injectable called Solensia.
Yes.
But it doesn't stop there.
Right.
So cancer, as our pets are living longer than ever before, and maybe environmental reasons, I don't know. But for whatever reason, what I do know is it is not uncommon for an animal, particularly an older animal, to have cancer. Now diagnostics have changed, and actually the possibility of that dog or cat living a very long time has changed too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, lots of options here for what we've seen just this week in cancer breakthroughs. Blood tests for cancer for the first time, coming to the market any minute.
For dogs and cats.
Yes.
This is not a,
not a human.
To
yes.
your point, it's, yeah. it's specifically for.
Exactly. Because we know, I mean, a big part of how we detect cancer is through its genetics. So naturally, a test for human genetics. We just can't translate that to dogs and cats. But now we're looking at cancer genes in dogs and cats and how we can detect them easily. We also saw something called heat diffusion imaging. This is a little device. You put it on these skin lumps and bumps in dogs and cats that are kind of scary, quite common. Too, a lot of older dogs get skin lumps and bumps. And what it does is it looks for the cancer cells to respond differently to the heat. So now we know, oh, yeah, this doesn't look good. We're not getting a good reading. Now I know I need to do a biopsy. Or now I know I just can't watch this and see what happens.
Or now I know I don't need to do the biopsy.
Right, even better news.
Yeah, which saves the animal from having to undergo a biopsy, but also saves the pet parent of the expense of the biopsy.
Yeah, and think about how reassuring that is, too, for us.
Best of all, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, now I have a test that tells me I can just watch this safely. I can just keep an eye on it, see what happens.
There was always thought to be, for decades and decades, it was a fatal disease in kittens called feline infectious peritonitis, or FIP. And no one ever thought, okay, this is never going to be anything we could treat. But it turns out that now we can.
Yeah, isn't that exciting?
That's amazing.
So we've been watching this very closely because feline infectious peritonitis is, of course, caused by
a coronavirus.
Yes. So awkward. How is that? But, you know, cats have benefited from all the research that's been done on coronaviruses. So we're just waiting. I know everyone's waiting with bated breath, truly, in the whole veterinary community for a drug to get approved by the FDA that has the ability not just to make it better, but to cure it. And that's remarkable.
It is remarkable. And one of two things will happen. Either the Food and Drug Administration Center for Veterinary Medicine will, because there's a drug out there, that they're waiting, we're waiting for them to approve. Clinical trials, safety, all of that has been assessed. I don't know why it's taking so long, but it is. But if that doesn't happen, there's a drug called Remdesivir that has been approved in other countries all over the world. And it turns out that drug can help people.
Yes.
Because we know that drug can help cats, which is a One Health story. So cats have participated. If it wasn't for these kittens getting FIP, and then Dr. Niels Peterson specifically at the University of California, Davis, a group that you know well called the Every Cat Health Foundation funding Dr. Peterson, and then him saying, hey, Remdesivir does work for this disease caused by the feline coronavirus. The human people, the Food and Drug Administration, when they were struggling when the pandemic first hit, what are we going to use? What antiviral can possibly work? They knew of the research because it's all been published multiple times. So they knew. And, well, cats aren't people. They were so desperate. They tried it. And it turns out
it works. Yeah, it was great news. I mean, it's a beautiful One Health story about how the how the health of animals, the health of people, and the health of our environment are so incredibly closely linked.
Yeah, it all intersects, that's for sure. From the North American veterinary community and the VMX Veterinary Conference, Dr. Dana Varbal, our own from Chicago.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Always good to talk to you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Joe Walkschlag of Cornell University is a professor there and also the chief medical officer at Elevet. We're talking about CBD. Let's start at square one for those who don't know. This isn't the stuff we smoke. This is a little different.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting journey. Long ago, they didn't think orally applied CBD was absorbed very well in dogs, and we did our, we'll say, groundbreaking pharmacokinetic study looking at it, whether it got into the dog, and lo and behold, it did if it was in sort of an oil base. And so that's where it started, and now we're kind of going from there in terms of trying to find out what it can be used for.
And this is not THC, that's what I was referring to.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not hallucinogenic, is it?
No, no. I mean, CBD doesn't even act in the same way that THC works. It's a little bit different of a structural molecule, and you don't get the, we'll say, the psychotropic or the funny feelings when you take CBD.
Which is safer in of itself. So people pick this up over the counter, and it's complicated because the laws are different everywhere, aren't they?
Well, federally, the laws pretty much have said since 2018 that any state can grow it. And then the states basically were kind of taken aback and said, well, okay, we have to develop our own state guidance to how to produce and ship interstate commerce. Now all 50 states, you can grow it, you can distribute it, you can do whatever you want, send it across the borders, et cetera. So, it's taken 5 years, but every state's pretty much come around.
But can veterinarians talk about it in every state and this is where this is the product I want you to get?
Yeah, so basically all the states allow vets to talk about it. It just comes down to whether your state allows you to dispense it in your clinic.
So I see.
The vets have the ability to say, well, maybe in my state, which there are very few that won't let you do it, maybe in my state I can't prescribe it to you out of my clinic, but you can go to the website and you can buy this product and we'll follow your dog up or your cat up.
So we're on WGN Radio. I think Illinois is one of the more stringent states, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, you guys luckily have medical marijuana.
We do.
And now you've gone completely recreational. So
we do, yeah.
I'd say now is really the time that you can use it safely, because now it's across humans and we'll just say animals in general. It's pretty safe to use, and no one's going to come down on you as a practitioner, for sure.
So maybe safe to use, but is it smart? Does it work?
Yeah. Yeah, CBD has had a very, we'll say, rapid 5-year ascent into the we'll say, pain management category, seizure control category, and even dermatologic conditions. And so we now have clinical data. A lot of it's from Elevet, that we have the ability to intervene in pain, and particularly osteoarthritis. We can intervene in seizure control, and we can intervene in dermatitis or pruritus from dermatitis.
All right, I want to talk about some of those things. So let's kind of take them one at a time. Seizure control. Seizures have been a problem in dogs forever, right, for a very long time. And it seems over the past, I'll make this up, 10 years, maybe it's 15 years, I don't know.
Yeah.
But we've seen a bit more of it for whatever reasons, environmental or genetic, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's there.
Right.
And using the right drug can either be really expensive, some of the pharmaceutical products, or ineffective with, in some cases, some pretty severe side effects. So they may work for the seizures, but now you've got these other issues.
Right.
So talk about CBD. I think the studies were done in Colorado.
Colorado.
And you did some?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
Colorado did a study, really kind of a 12-week safety and efficacy study, and they did show some seizure reduction in the dogs. Pretty small population. They're actually doing a much bigger cohort and looking at dogs again at similar dose. We then followed up with another pilot study with about 14 dogs that got either placebo for a period of time or the actual Elevet product, 2 mg/kg, and we found that those dogs actually had about, on average, about a 50% reduction in seizure, right? So
that's a lot.
That's important, right.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is that everybody was worried that it would interact with other drugs, and right now it looks like CBD doesn't really interact with a lot of the other commonly used anti-epileptic drugs. So it's a safe option to throw on board, if you...
And maybe less needed of the anti-epileptic drug
as
a result.
Right. So, yeah.
That's a good thing.
You can decrease some of those anti-epileptics. Not a bad thing at all.
So if you go to veterinary conferences anywhere now, one of the big topics is pain in dogs and cats and what to do about it. Well, this is something that can be done. I don't know if you know about cats yet.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Do you?
We're finding out about cats. We just started a
Will I be the first to know?
I will definitely send you an email with the initial look at data.
I want to be the first to know, but we know something about dogs.
No, definitely. In dogs, it was quite nice. We did, we'll say, the first study in osteoarthritis and showed a positive effect. And then a couple of other companies in Europe came along and did similar studies, really kind of almost mimicking what we did to kind of prove that it might be real, and it seemed to be real. There's a difference between osteoarthritis pain and pain post spay or neuter, and And we think, at least based on some preliminary data, that, you know, that post-surgical pain, it's just not as effective. It may be used in adjunct with some of the other things for pain, but it's not going to be your primary go-to. Well, you know, in osteoarthritis, particularly with some of the side effects of the commonly given drugs, this seems like a very, we'll say, first line of defense. You know, give it a try first before you go and try some of the things with, we'll just say, more severe side effects.
Yeah, so. The question has always been, where do I get the product from? And they're not all the same. I mean, there are trace elements of arsenic in some of these products that are from China, dare I say.
Yeah.
Everywhere. And you can get them at, what, your local supermarket or anywhere, the gas station even, right?
Well, you know, from our standpoint, and we embrace the others in the community that are doing the science, right, to really understand the dose and develop really good dosing regimens. And the consistency of the product becomes a huge issue, right? We know that our product, at least, is consistent batch to batch and that it's quite very stable 18 months out.
Well, we have I would say consistency solid. And also sourcing.
Yes, of, and of sourcing.
The, yeah. So you're a veterinary product. It's called Elevet, and it's the company includes veterinarians, and they're specifically for dogs and cats, unlike at least some of the products out there.
Yeah, and that's the problem is you can go pick up any tincture at the local Walgreens or whatever the pharmacy is. Everybody seems to have a tincture, and they're telling you it's the best stuff ever. And as you said, the consistency is the issue, is that product. First off, products come and go nowadays, and we feel it's like, you know, listen, you may not have huge growth, but what we want to do is have a product that's available that's consistent for the veterinarian and for the veterinarian to recommend so that they know that that clinical effect will likely stay there long term because the product is so consistent. So,
Professor at Cornell University, exceedingly respected veterinarian and researcher.
Some days.
Well, today.
Yes.
Dr. Joe Wachschlag, thank you
All right,
so much.
Pleasure. Thank you, Steve.
So there I am at a veterinary conference in Orlando, Florida, and we're talking at a reception. I'm talking with a friend of mine, a veterinarian in New York City, and up comes Dr. David Tweed. And you say, who is that? He is so famous. She was intimidated, to tell you the truth, and walked away. And I've known Dr. Tweed for years, and he informed me of something that impacts all of you who happen to have a dog and feed your dog a pet food. Well, that's nearly everyone who has a dog, right? It has to do with the amount of copper, he says, way too much in our dog foods. Well, I had to look it up, to tell you the truth. What is copper exactly, and why do not only dogs need copper, but all mammals, including us? Why do we need copper? He will explain all that and break some news, really. I mean, this has not been talked about, to my knowledge, in the public before. But we'll do that next week with Dr. Tweed, right here on WGN. This film will touch your heart, I guarantee, or your money back. And if you're a member of Amazon Prime, no money involved. You can simply go to Amazon Prime and find the film. It's called Wildcat. It's a story that along the way, I will tell you personally, I had tears in my eyes more than once, and for more than one reason. This movie is not only about a wild cat, but it is also about a wild cat called an ocelot, but it's also about people as well. And you get to really know these people. And it's also about the jungle and about why we need to protect these spaces. And this jungle happens to be along or near the Amazon, in the Amazon Basin in Peru. Harry Turner, I think I'll start here. How in the world did you land in the middle of, kind of in the middle of nowhere in Peru?
Yeah, so, you know, after I left school, I joined the military. And then when I was 18 years old, I deployed to my first tour of Op Herrick 16. Obviously, being 18 years old and being at war is not ideal. You know, when you're 18, you think you can conquer everything, but that is, you know, far from the truth. So after, you know, leaving a war zone and struggling with my mental health, I landed myself in Peru with a quick Google search, and basically I just wanted to escape. I wanted to get away from everything. And then when I was in the Peruvian Amazon, I met, you know, some great people, some great friends, and I started doing some great, started doing some great things myself. You know, I never really thought I could achieve with what I was dealing with, but my mind was kind of messed up, but I wanted to keep pushing on.
So one of those great people you met, you happen to become very friendly with benefits, I suspect. I think they showed that in the movie. Samantha Zwicker is her name, and a wildlife researcher. And you work together helping wildlife until you happen to meet one wild cat in particular. And then you tried to do, Harry, what I don't believe anyone has ever done before.
Yeah, I was in the jungle kind of, you know, honing my skills on reptiles and amphibians and you know, just doing everything that I possibly could to kind of like further my own education in this incredible and wild place until, you know, one day when this ocelot was taken from his mother. The story is kind of unclear because, you know, people didn't really want to tell the truth. You know, it's kind of like a dark thing, taking an animal from the wild and trying to put it onto the black market. But I wanted to, you know, I wanted to make this animal's life worth living. I didn't want him to go into captivity. I didn't want him to, you know, be killed too early because of, you know, malnourishment and disease. And so I took this animal in. I slept with him. I fed him. I did absolutely everything that I possibly could to make sure that this cat was going to be, you know, healthy and able to survive into the jungle.
And, well, and you did, and you did, Harry, what I don't think has ever been done before. So there is a protocol if you want to rehabilitate, if you will, or there's a name for this, rewild. I forget what the name is. An animal back into the wild, back into where they belong in the first place for, I'll do South America, a little kind of monkey called golden lion tamarins. They are being reintroduced. I know that. And there's a whole way to do it. And you read page upon page about how to do this. For this kind of animal, for an ocelot, I don't believe it had ever been done, had it?
No, when he was, you know, sleeping with me and I was feeding him, I thought, how do I now make this animal go back to where he belongs? What do I need to do? And that's where the kind of process of this rehabilitation came in, as, right, I need to make sure that he can hunt. I need to make sure that we walk at night. And so, therefore, I naturally had to become a nocturnal animal. I had to become the mother to this cat. And so I was teaching him how to walk at night, teaching him how to hunt, teaching him the dangers of the jungle, because the jungle is a very dangerous place. And as you can see in the film, you know, that kind of progresses into about a year old.
Yeah, I mean, this doesn't take weeks to do. It takes many months to do. And I don't want to give too much away, but at one point, there's a caiman. That's like an alligator-like animal. And it occurs to me we also need to explain what an ocelot is for some people who may not know. But there's a caiman, and this is still a very young ocelot on top of it. It wasn't a particularly big caiman, as I recall, but still, it could have gone either way. And you were, like, panicking and acting like a protective mom in some ways. And also, do tell me what an ocelot is.
Yeah, so an ocelot is a semi-arboreal cat that lives in the Amazon. Now, if you can picture like a cocker spaniel, that's about the rough size that an ocelot is. They have this incredible marking which covers all their body, very similar to like a small jag, and their print is individual to each. It's kind of like a thumbprint that we have as humans. It's very unique to each individual cat, and they are just one of the stealthiest, quietest, you know, aggressive cats of the jungle. They're just an incredible species.
But they are disappearing, and they're disappearing fast. You mentioned one of the reasons for the so-called pet trade, the black market. No, clearly they are not adequate pets, and most that are brought in as pets, I suspect they're declawed, their teeth are ground down, but even then, as beautiful as they are, they either become malnourished or they're treated in such a way or that they have to be given up because people have no idea what they have. They just have gotten them for their beauty. And they're very much a wild animal. But also their habitat is disappearing, and there are other reasons as well. So they are disappearing. So every individual ocelot that is reintroduced matters. Now, what I don't want to talk about is what happened from here. Because you have to watch the movie Wild Cat in order to see that. But I do want to ask you this. Did the experience of trying to introduce the ocelots change your life?
It did. I was in a place of great depression. Obviously, doing a tour at 18 years old, I was definitely not in the best headspace. And doing something for these cats was what I needed. I needed to have purpose. I needed to have reason to keep waking up and pushing every day. I needed to have that, you know, drive in my gut and in my heart that just kept me going. And then, you know, it got to a point of where, you know, I was teaching these cats, but they were also teaching me, so I was learning at the same time. It definitely bettered me for the future, and it's definitely made me a better person today.
What were the cats teaching you? I mean, they weren't teaching you how to climb trees or catch bugs. So what were they teaching you?
You can't, you know, a lot of people go to university and they study at school and they read in books, you know, all of these different things about the Amazon rainforest. But for me, I struggle with dyslexia. I'm not very good at this kind of like educational system that we use. And so when I was in the jungle, I'm much more of a hands-on person. Now, these animals were teaching me where to find different animals. These animals were teaching me things that I don't even know has ever been recorded in science. I was learning about symbiotic relationships between different animals and ocelots. I was learning the diets of ocelots. I was learning, you know, so much more than you can read in just the everyday book or on the website. So it's like there's so many things that I was being taught by these animals, which you can't just learn every day.
Yeah, but you didn't always succeed at what you wanted. I want to talk about that just a little bit when we come back. And what life was like to live in the jungle. You didn't exactly have hot running water, did you, Harry?
Absolutely not.
No. So we'll talk about what life was really like in the jungle. We'll do all of that when we come back right here on WGN. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. It's on Amazon Prime. You can find the movie. It's called Wildcat. In some ways, Harry, the ocelot, when it was young, when it was just a little kitten, you have to admit, well, you made it clear, I think I've helped a little bit to make it clear, they are not pets. No way, no how. Having said that, they are awfully cute. And as kittens, they kind of remind me as, well, I have a kitten. My kitten's now nearly a year old, but nevertheless, it or people that have house cats. I mean, was there, did you see any similarity there?
The similarities are very close when cats are kittens, you know, because every kitten wants to play, every kitten wants to hang out. And this is why, you know, ocelots, when they do have offspring, is they usually have two or three, and usually only one will survive because curiosity usually does, you know, kill the cat. And so when they're a lot younger, it's a very, very, you know, close to a domesticated cat, just with larger teeth, larger claws, and a little bit more ferocity. But when they get to an older age, they're definitely nothing to, you know, to be classed as a pet.
I love the way when you were in the forest and you were looking for an ocelot and you called the ocelot, not by name, but you made a sound. Can you do that for us?
Yeah, it's kind of more of a guttural thing, but when cats are trying to call and when we're trying to, you know, communicate in the jungle, they'll usually flick their ears or flick their tail, but usually there'll be more of a noise, which kind of comes with that.
I love how you do that. Do that again. I could not do that no matter how much money you paid me. I don't think I'm capable. So how did that's amazing that I love that. So you would do what you just did and the ocelot would come running. At one point, and I don't want to go into detail because I really don't want to give away anything. No spoilers here. So I don't want to do that. The name of the movie is called Wildcat, but there were really two wild cats, and at one point your heart was broken. I'll leave it at that. But here's what I want to talk about. Then you had this downward spiral. Personally, did you ever think that, okay, I'm going to take my own life?
Since Afghanistan, I originally went to the jungle to kill myself. I wanted to make it look like an accident. And then during this process of rewilding these ocelots, I definitely got to a very, very dark place in my life. I thought about it. I definitely had trouble getting out of bed some days. Depression is just not an easy thing. It doesn't matter what you're doing in life. It doesn't matter if you are succeeding or if you're, you know, accomplishing incredible goals. If you struggle with depression, you struggle, you know, deeply. It doesn't matter how good your life looks because you can only see in black and gray. And I've struggled with depression for the majority of my adult life. And, you know, it is not a nice thing. I could be in the most beautifulest of jungles, but I could still not be happy. And even though I was doing this incredible thing, I sometimes could still not be happy in my true self.
Are you okay now?
I am better. I'm dealing with my depression and my anxiety a lot better. I have a lot of really, you know, incredible things that I'm doing in the future. I just have been starting projects with my non-profit. My non-profit is called Emerald Arch. And you can find that at www.emeraldarch.org. And these new projects have given me this kind of new kind of like fight. I want to do great things. We're going to be buying land in Ecuador so that we can then take people who are struggling with PTSD, veterans or people who have, you know, had childhood trauma to the jungle so that they can do something similar to what I did. So they can go to a natural place and they can reset and they can rethink about what their life is. And they will have the help of someone who has done it themselves.
Wow, that's...
Not only just helping them, but also saving forests and saving wild places as well.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, on both ends, you're helping people, but you're helping the environment and the animals that live there and plants that live there that desperately need this at this point. What was it like to live in the jungle? When I was in the jungle, the times that I've been, I mean, it's pretty rudimentary, but it takes, for me anyway, it took me a while, but once you acclimate, it's like, I don't know, a breath of fresh air, quite literally in some ways. What was it like for you?
You know, after spending so many years in the jungle, I didn't even need a watch. I could tell the time from the different sounds of the animals. I could tell the time from the, wow, the, you know, where the sun was in the sky. It was like this incredible place that it really did kind of make you feel alive. The one thing I definitely could not get used to, though, was the mosquitoes. They would just rip me apart. And because ocelots are primarily nocturnal, it meant I was out a lot during the nighttime. And because ocelots are very kind of like friendly with their mothers, they would come up to me and they would lick my skin and they would, you know, treat me with respect, but then go off and do their own thing. And so because of that, I couldn't wear bug repellent, and I didn't wear bug repellent the whole time I was in the jungle. So the mosquitoes would absolutely destroy me. Hmm. But at the same time, I was doing something incredible, and it was just a kind of like a bump in the long road.
Did you build up any resistance to the bites where at first they really bothered you, but then later they didn't? Or is that something that just did not happen?
No, I definitely built up a tolerance, that's for sure. I remember the first time I went to the jungle, I got destroyed and I was itching and like going crazy inside my own skin. And then, you know, after it, I could walk about topless and I'd be bitten. But at the same time, it would annoy me, but it wouldn't irritate me like a normal bite usually would.
What did you do for food?
Yeah, so for food, you know, I would get shipments of food, you know, maybe every 3 weeks, every 4 weeks. I would usually just eat things which lasted long, so like rice or potatoes. I would get flour so that I could make bread. But a lot of the time I would, you know, use my instincts. And if I went fishing or if I, you know, caught something, then, you know, I would share it with the ocelots. There was one time that we ate caiman together because I had no food. I was with this ocelot and he had just killed a caiman. And so, you know, that little bit of caiman tail that I had and he had the rest, we would just share things, you know. It was just like a mother and son relationship. If I had something, he would share it. If he caught something, I would share it.
Wow.
And so a lot of the times it was kind of really, really living off the beaten path and off the grid and just, you know, doing what I had to.
Well, if you tell me it tastes like chicken, then I quit. I don't know. Well, the name of the movie, again, on Amazon Prime is called Wildcat. Harry Turner, fascinating. I wish we had more time to talk. A pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
The World Small Animal Veterinary Association, known as WSAVA, is calling this an international canine welfare crisis. And those are really pretty strong words. Here's what they're talking about. They're talking about pugs, French bulldogs, English bulldogs, and other breeds commonly called brachiocephalic breeds, which means they have limited airways. They're the ones with pushed-in faces. They look like they walked into a wall. Many people say, oh, that's so cute. But the reality is so many of those dogs around the world, not only in the United States, have breathing difficulties, and that's now been given a name, the brachiocephalic obstructive airway syndrome, or BOAS, and the condition impacts quality of life for these dogs, often daily, and sometimes an early death. I mean, many of these dogs, so it's 75 degrees outside, it's nice outside. I mean, other dogs are running all over the place in the park and having a great These dogs struggle to walk around the block at any age, particularly if they're overweight and or older dogs. And many of these dogs are overweight. And eventually, with good luck, they become older dogs. So WSAVA is calling on a variety of different partners, including breeders, including kennel clubs, like the American Kennel Club that has done nothing about this. So in the UK, their kennel club has stood up. They have now done that for several years and said, we are going to do something about this. Not in the United States at all. In fact, the reverse is true because so many of these dogs are purchased at pet stores, which means they're from puppy mill operators and others, which the AKC fights when people like me say, no, we have to ban pet store sales of dogs. More about this on my website. That's stevedale.tv. Talk to you next week, bright and early on WGN.